the administration is trying hard to win, but they don't see how they're going to win this trade war.
In the latest move in the U.S.-China trade war, China exempts some U.S. products. It's Thursday, September 12th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly in Washington. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook and be part of the program. Also ahead, while Americans observe the anniversary of terrorist attacks in 2001, a U.S. court has ruled the terror watch list unconstitutional. And U.S. foreign policy is likely to remain the same, even though the U.S. National Security Advisor has been fired. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China says it will exempt a handful of U.S.-made products from the latest round of retaliatory tariffs. They were sparked by U.S. President Donald Trump's initial demand for changes in China's trade, subsidy, and intellectual property practices. China's finance ministry released a list of 16 items that would not be subjected to additional tariffs. The items include shrimp, industrial grease, an advanced cancer-fighting machine, lubricating oil, and various other chemicals. The exemptions will take effect on September 17th and remain in effect for 1 year. Washington State is heavily dependent on trade and is feeling perhaps the largest impact from tariffs. VOA Mandarin correspondent Adriana Zhang recently spoke about trade tariffs with Democratic Congressman Rick Larson of Washington State's 2nd District.
This, I think, is the most important thing facing the Washington State economy, this trade war. A recent report came out that showed the tariffs alone are costing the average household in America $1,000 more a year because of the trade war. So that's one way it impacts us. The second, because we're the most trade-dependent state, a trade war with China will actually impact us the most. Right now, the trade war is kind of this overhang on our economy in the Northwest because there's so much trade between Washington State-based companies and China. You see it a lot in agriculture in our state, where the tariffs on agriculture products grown here in Washington State headed to China now has resulted in those products being left out of the Chinese market. And that means that Washington State jobs are getting lost as a result. So there's any number of ways that this trade war is impacting us now, and it's unfortunate, and really trying to find a way to end it.
Mm-hmm. So what do you hear from your constituents?
Mm-hmm. What I hear from my constituents mostly is that the administration is trying hard to win, but they don't see how they're going to win this trade war. Trade wars are not easy to win. The president said they're easy to win. They are not easy to win. In fact, nobody wins in a trade war. So the folks I represent are running out of patience. They're running out of patience and time for the result that the president said we would get from taking on China with these tariffs. I think we need to dial this trade war back and get back to some collaboration with China, but also get back to collaborating with our more natural friends and allies in trade like Japan and Europe, and put together a united front against what everyone agrees are some very seriously protectionist Chinese economic policies.
Mm-hmm. So in your view, what should be done differently from what this administration has been doing?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One is the decision to pull out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership probably was the first mistake this president made. Being in the TPP would have given the United States and other trading friends and allies a foothold to push back collectively against bad Chinese economic policy, protectionist policies. It would have put China's economic planners in a position to want to change its rules to come into TPP, as opposed to now they don't have to change the rules at all. That's first. Second, we do need to reform the World Trade Organization so that we can better, the United States can better use it, along with more natural trading partners like Japan and the EU, to develop cases against Chinese protectionist economic policies. Those are the two things that I think we need to do. Right now, I don't know how to get from where we are today to where we need to be tomorrow.
Many people believe that China is actually stealing the intellectual property rights of the U.S. companies, especially high-tech companies. And there are a lot of high-tech companies in your district. Mm-hmm. So are you worried that China is stealing their technologies? And what do you think should be done or can be done about it?
Yeah, this issue of intellectual property theft is one of the top five issues that U.S. companies and their workers have with the Chinese government economic policy, and it is very real. There's documented cases of IP theft by both the Chinese government and those working for the Chinese government, maybe as third parties, as well as Chinese businesses. So it is very serious. It is very real. Congress passed and President Obama signed legislation a few years back to give the United States some tools to counter IP theft used for industrial espionage, that is stealing intellectual property to further the economic interests of Chinese companies. And that's an important tool in the toolbox for us to use, and we should continue to use that that law. I think as well in working in the discussion we're having with China, this issue of IP theft has to be on top of the agenda. So whatever resolution we get to on the tariffs includes some actions and some commitments by the Chinese on IP theft, maybe cracking down on their own companies that are stealing IP. I think if China wants to be a player in the world economy in the, long in the future beyond manufacturing, it is going to have to do a better job of enforcing its own IP rules against its own companies. If they do not, their own companies are going to find that their stuff is going to be stolen by the same Chinese hackers who are stealing U.S. intellectual property. And that's not good for Chinese businesses.
That was Democratic Congressman Rick Larson speaking with VOA's Adriana Zhang. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. China scolds Germany over meeting with a Hong Kong activist. An Indonesian province shuts schools due to forest fire haze. A Chinese-born Australian lawmaker is under fire over past links to the Chinese Foreign Influence Network. A Pakistani official says the issues in Kashmir have forced troops to pull back from the Afghan border. And an online TV channel gives voice to the stateless Rohingya. Expanded coverage of these stories is on voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. After the 2001 terrorist attacks in New York and Washington, the U.S. created a terrorism screening database. It collected the names of suspected and known terrorists so they could be kept from entering the country. But recently, a U.S. federal judge ruled the list is unconstitutional. Sabasha Khan reports.
The Department of Homeland Security's terrorist watch list is believed to contain over 1 million names of foreigners and American citizens. It does not prevent individuals from boarding flights, but can impose restrictions on their travel. A group of 23 Muslim Americans sued the government over the list in April 2019, arguing they could not adequately challenge their inclusion in the list. This month, a federal court in its ruling declared the list unconstitutional.
Next, we'll be hearing from Hassan Shibli, one of our 23 brave plaintiffs.
Hassan Shibli was one of the plaintiffs in this case.
I've been waiting 15 years for this victory. For 15 years, I've been harassed and targeted by the government, even though I've done nothing wrong, treated like a second-class citizen, stigmatized, profiled, harassed, treated like a criminal.
Critics of the database, including the Council on Islamic Relations and American Civil Liberties Union, say the list has long had vague standards, been cloaked in secrecy, and included names of people who should never have been on it. Still, a number of U.S. lawmakers consider the list critical for American security. Republican Senator Ted Cruz.
We are facing a global war on terror. We are facing, in particular, radical Islamic terrorists who have murdered Americans, who have murdered our allies, and we need to be clear-eyed and vigilant, preventing terrorism and stopping terrorism before it happens.
Federal Court Judge Anthony Trenga said in his judgment that the program in its current form does not meet the due process rights provided by the Constitution to a U.S. citizen. Lena Masri of CARE says if someone's name appears on the list, even if it's taken off, the record still exists in the database and there is no known way to remove the name.
So having records expunged in the terror screening database of everybody who's been listed in the watch list that is removed from the watch list, including our clients, it needs to occur.
The judge's ruling means that both the defendants and the plaintiffs must propose changes to the database program. A final ruling is expected later this month. Sabasha Khan, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
An Asia news update. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe shuffled his cabinet on Wednesday. He added two women and the son of a former leader. But he kept key positions in the hands of close allies. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And speaking of government shakeups, U.S. President Donald Trump announced on Tuesday that he had fired his national security adviser, John Bolton. But the U.S. Secretary of State says U.S. foreign policy will not change much, if at all, following Bolton's departure. VOA's White House correspondent Patsy Witakasora has more.
National Security Advisor John Bolton was supposed to be in this Tuesday afternoon briefing to discuss sanctions to combat terrorism alongside Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
Today's executive order by President Trump adds further muscle to U.S. counterterrorism efforts.
But he was fired by President Trump less than 2 hours prior via Twitter. Bolton pushed back, saying he offered to resign before he was fired. His sudden departure came on the heels of canceled Camp David peace talks with the Taliban. Those talks were to discuss the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. Bolton was reportedly against making that deal.
It looks like some of the problems ended up with some of the disagreements that happened with John Bolton subsequently after he decided not to do the meeting with the Taliban.
It also came at a time when the president is pursuing diplomatic efforts with a number of adversaries, including North Korea and Iran.
John Bolton, for a long time, was advocating for regime change, which is the biggest concern, obviously, of the Islamic Republic. With him being gone and regime change probably being taken off the table, this creates some space for potential dialogue between Tehran and Washington.
John Bolton is seen as a hawk, a strong advocate for American military power. He often clashed with Trump, who, despite his aggressive rhetoric, is averse to foreign military involvement. Bolton's firing follows a high turnover trend in the president's foreign policy and national security team.
And our allies don't like that sort of uncertainty and turnover in the administration either. They want the administration to speak with one voice, and they want it to speak consistently. And they're just not getting that from this presidential administration.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo insisted Bolton's departure does not impact continuity.
But I don't think any leader around the world should make any assumption that because someone of us departs, that President Trump's foreign policy will change in a material way.
John Bolton is the third national security advisor that Trump has ousted in less than 3 years. His replacement is scheduled to be appointed next week. Patsy Wirakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Coming up, a surprise move by the tech giant Apple. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
Contaminated water from the Fukushima nuclear plant might have to be released into the Pacific Ocean. The water was used to cool damaged fuel cores after the earthquake and tsunami in 2011. Right now, the water is being stored in giant tanks at the site, but Tokyo Electric Power has said it will run out of storage space for the water in 2022. This is VOA Asia. Apple introduced new versions of its iPhone on Tuesday. The company faces growing competition from less expensive smartphone providers, but this week's launch caught the attention of consumers and critics for something Apple didn't do. Here's VOA's Richard Green on Apple's new strategy.
For our customers that want the most sophisticated technology that really pushes the limits, we've created something truly special. And I'm thrilled to introduce it to you now.
At the company's headquarters in Cupertino, California, Apple Chief Executive Officer Tim Cook announced that the new versions of the groundbreaking iPhone, dubbed the iPhone 11 Pro and the iPhone 11 Pro Max, now have a third camera lens that brings them up to par with the cameras on rival smartphones from Samsung and Huawei.
With these three cameras, you have incredible creative control. So, for example, you can use the telephoto and get in close on your subject to really zoom in on it. Or you can use the wide to tell a bit more of a story. Or you can pull all the way out to the ultra-wide and reveal the full surroundings.
But in a surprise move, Apple set the price of its entry-level iPhone 11 at $700 compared to the $750 price tag on last year's iPhone XR and much less than the $1,000 and up set for the two advanced iPhone 11s. The price cut reflects the recent trend among consumers to hold on to their current phones well after new, more expensive versions are introduced.
You have people that sunk in $1,000 for a phone. They're not going to buy for another 2-3 years, probably. So it's always difficult. This is about capturing more of the older generation device owners and also capturing more people from outside the iOS ecosystem.
Starting today,
CEO Tim Cook also said that anyone who buys the new iPhones or the upgraded iPad handheld computer will receive a free one-year subscription to the new Apple TV Plus video streaming service, which begins on November 1st.
These are just a few of the exclusive...
Apple says the new service, which will showcase original dramas, comedies, and other content, will be offered to new subscribers at just $5 a month, putting it in direct competition to Netflix and other streaming video services. The new iPhones, along with the upgraded versions of its iPad and Apple Watch, will go on sale on September 20th. Richard Green, VOA News, Washington.
And speaking of things going on sale, the Hong Kong Stock Exchange wants to buy the London Stock Exchange. That's right, it's the 300-year-old institution that was at the heart of the British Empire. It's a bold move, but the London Stock Exchange said Wednesday it would consider the offer. This is VOA Asia. Voters in Russia dealt the party of Vladimir Putin a heavy blow in local elections this week. It lost control of key regions, including the capital. The results raise questions of how long President Putin may continue to lead what some say is an increasingly restive nation. Mary Mata narrates the story.
Russian President Vladimir Putin cast his ballot in elections that were widely expected to reflect rising discontent over political and economic stagnation in the country. Those expectations were met. Putin's party went from having 38 seats to 25.
The results of the election turned out to be very controversial because, on the one hand, one might state that the population voted to a great extent against authorities. We saw in Moscow that the opposition won in 19 or 20 constituencies. It was unclear till the last moment. In other words, in nearly half electoral constituencies, this is a sign that people are unhappy.
These elections were marred by police crackdowns on those who demanded the participation of other political leaders who were not allowed to run. Opposition leader Alexei Navalny called on followers to vote for candidates who had the best chances of defeating Putin allies. Analysts call this Navalny's first strategic victory. Now some experts say all eyes are on whether this strategy will galvanize support ahead of the next parliamentary elections in 2021.
The forces involved in the Moscow election are starting to gradually prepare for the State Duma election campaign. This election campaign is scheduled for 2021. There seems to be enough time, 2 years. But I think what was going on in Moscow became a catalyst that accelerated the election campaign at the national level.
But despite the political drama, abstention was the main event at this show. Only 17% of eligible voters in Moscow turned out to cast ballots. Among those who did vote, the desire for change was palpable.
These elections mean that the Muscovites do not cower before the authorities and will not let the authorities crush them.
I would like to see not just the change in the State Duma, but a change of the overall attitude toward a human who lives in this country.
Some analysts say Russia's leadership is at a crossroads. In theory, this would be President Putin's last term, and Russia's power structure is due for a change.
That is why they are getting prepared different sorts of political variants. It is quite likely that in the post-Putin or even in the late Putin period, the system will be a bit more pluralistic.
The next elections are still years away, and the current presidential term ends in 2024. But there are some who are already thinking of and preparing for a Russia without Vladimir Putin. This is Mary Mata for Ricardo Makina and Olga Pavlova in Moscow.
And here's some completely unpolitical news from Russia. A family there is looking after 12 abandoned raccoons. The wild animals were raised as pets by owners who could no longer keep them. VOA's Jim Randall narrates this report about masked creatures and the people who love them.
People easily fall for raccoons' cute looks, but often they are not ready to take full responsibility for the animals, which typically live 10 or 15 years. While highly intelligent and charming, experts say these furry creatures are difficult to housebreak, mischievous, and sometimes destructive. They may also carry diseases and can bite people or pets. That's why many are abandoned after a while, veterinarian Natalia Yatsenko told Reuters TV.
Tragic situations often happen to raccoons. They are not dogs or cats, but rather wild animals. So people abandon raccoons when they've played around with them for a while.
Once domesticated, they cannot return to wildlife. So abandoned raccoons may die if no one takes care of them. The Yatsenko family has the skills and facilities to keep raccoons and recently bought land nearby to build a larger facility, giving the animals more space. Natalia and Igor Yatsenko were amused by the fluffy bandits, as Igor calls them, after their first encounter in the wild.
We were on vacation in the Northern Caucasus, so these little bandits came to our tent and totally ravaged it. We watched them and fell in love with them.
Natalia plans to adopt more raccoons in the future until they fall out of fashion as pets or the shelter gets full.
We have a project planned, Raccoon Park. It's for saving raccoons who got into a hard situation. To give them a home, food, good conditions, so that they can stay here for their whole life without ever having to leave.
The Yatsenkos also provide shelter for other animals, including cats and dogs. Most came to live with the family after being given up on by their owners. Jim Randall, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, or write to us on VOA Asia Facebook. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, Our engineer, Zineb Abdulrahman. Our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Ira Melman, and Keith Lane. And listeners like you, such as at Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly in Washington. Enjoy your day.